Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is Annie Leontis. Is that right, Leontis?
That's right.
Okay. Professor of Writing at George Washington University, and we're talking about her new book. It is dynamic. Sex with a Brain Injury on Concussion and Recovery. Annie, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Mark.
I had no idea what to expect from this book. And what I got was a really personal view of what it's like to live with brain injury. And also, it's very much a memoir of things of your life before you had your brain injury. But it was unrelenting. It was an amazing piece of writing, and congratulations on that.
Thank you so much.
Now, when we say concussion, I'll tell you one thing I got out of your book is that doesn't seem like a good enough word. And I know that you use traumatic brain injury, TBI, a lot. But I got the feeling like we're so used to talking about concussion, it's like no big thing. And I think that was the biggest takeaway I got from your book, that that's not the case.
Yeah, I think it's become such a saturated, almost meaningless word, you know, concussion, that we think of it almost like a punchline, you know, no pun intended. I'm thinking of like all of the Hollywood films and narratives we have in our culture, and they all actually are false narratives, because we really can only imagine quite a severe brain injury, you know, like a serious accident or, you know, a skiing collision or something. And we just have this image of like a World War One vet or somebody who's completely pulled out of the world, when in reality, there are millions of people every year who get incurred concussions and their lives are dramatically changed. And they look just like you and me.
And this is exactly what happened to you. Now, you had 3 concussions in a year.
Yeah. And that was, you know, that was the trouble for me.
That's the trouble for anybody.
It's the trouble for anybody. Yeah. Don't get 3 in a year. I do not recommend it.
Well, don't get one. I think that's the thing I learned is don't get one. But talk to me about those 3 concussions first before what was diagnosed as a concussion?
Well, the first one was a biking accident. Ugh. And, you know, that can happen to anyone. And I actually just learned recently, even with a helmet, you can get concussed after falling off your bike. And so what I didn't know at the time, you know, I got an MRI. They said no brain bleed, or rather a CAT scan, no brain bleed. And, you know, you're good, be on your way. And so I expected I'd recover pretty quickly. But what happens is that you become quite vulnerable after one, and you're, you know, after your first concussion, you're 1 to 2 times more likely to get a second. After your second, you're 2 to 3 times more likely to get a third. And of course, that grows exponentially. And I know people who have had 12, 13, 14 in their lifetimes. And you just become quite vulnerable to re-injury.
And you write about that. I mean, you get, obviously, with good reason, you get paranoid about getting hit in the head and participating in anything that might happen.
Yeah. I mean, even taking the trolley in Philadelphia where I live, I'm like, you know, I'm aware of elbows. I'm also quite short, you know, but I've become quite, I think many people become quite diligent after they're injured because they realize like, even if I don't get concussed, I can kind of ring the bell, and there are subconcussive hits. So, you know, it becomes something that you live with rather than something that you're just, you know, that's in the periphery.
I like how you were initially diagnosed with mild TBI, and the doctor likened it to having a bad hangover and suggested you take Tylenol. And that's another thing I learned from your book. Doctors and the neurologists don't really know a lot about concussion in the brain and how it affects behavior. They know some, but they don't have a deep knowledge of it, it seems.
I think the issue is that our understanding of the brain is limited, you know?
Yep.
I mean, way back, I mean, we've been studying the brain and concussion since the ancients, right? Ancient Greece, ancient Egypt. And they kind of knew almost as much as we knew. I mean, Hippocrates says no head injury is too severe to despair of, nor too trivial to ignore. And that, you know, when I came across that quote doing this research, I thought to myself, like, wow, we really have kind of dismissed and minimized brain injury. Again, mostly because every brain is different. Therefore, every brain injury is different. And of course, science only has so much knowledge of the brain, even though we've been studying it for thousands of years.
It's amazing when you talk about your symptoms as the book goes along, they're just myriad. Severe headaches, you can't read, tinnitus. There are numerous anger issues, which we'll talk about in a bit, anxiety. And there's an amazing quote from you: "You miss all the jokes, all the fun." And just expand on that, because that really hit hard.
I think this is true for anyone who is grappling with a chronic condition. You know, it could be MS. It could be, fibromyalgia. It's these invisible conditions that tend to tax you, because the body only has so many languages, so they tend to be pain or emotional lability or, anxiety or tinnitus, right? So, like, I dropped that one. But the idea that, like, we're dealing with these symptoms all of the time, they become their own job. And then then you spend, the other points you've got, the other energy points you've got on work or family, and all of a sudden, the things that you used to love to do or had the energy to do, they become really inaccessible. And it's a loss. It's a real loss for people.
And first of all, and you're married, and your wife was, we'll talk about that. I mean, that for anybody who has a significant other, the fact that all these things are going on is a huge barrier between you and that person.
Yeah, right.
Because you end up getting tired of telling them everything that's going on.
Yeah, and sometimes they get tired of hearing it, understandably. So, and I think, brain injuries and these other conditions we're alluding to, like, they don't just happen to one person in a family or a partnership. They happen to both of you. And for me, I thought of this book as kind of a love story at heart. I understood, it took years for us to understand, but my wife was going through the brain injury in her own way, in proximity to me. And I just am thinking about all those couples out there. And we never really talk about what these things are like in families and partnerships who are just suffering through it on their own and kind of have no idea, right? No idea how to deal with it, or they don't recognize their partner anymore. They don't recognize themselves anymore. So that felt pretty important to the project.
And they keep expecting it to get better right away.
Mm-hmm.
And then you know that, and so you're getting paranoid about the fact that they're expecting you to get better right away, and it's such a long process of recovery. And the title of the book, Sex with a Brain Injury, is a real issue. I mean, you write about it in the book. You found it just frustrating and horrible. And as you write about it, you quite enjoyed sex and were quite good at it. but then all of a sudden there are things like arousal migraines. Orgasms made your head explode, essentially. So that intimacy that you had with your partner is just getting all screwed up.
Yeah, right. So, like, if you can't even inhabit your body anymore, there's almost nowhere to go. And intimacy, that looks different for different couples, but it is important to my relationship and how I connect with my partner. And of course, when we know when language fails, sex can sometimes be a way for people to connect. And we lost that too for a while. And it was another thing to grieve, another way of being in the world that is about, pleasure and connection, and all of a sudden that's gone too.
There are some symptoms, though, and I don't take this the wrong way, that were sort of funny.
Oh, no, they are funny. I love dark comedy, and the only way through this was to laugh.
Well, yeah. Talk to me about Mambo Number 5.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I just, part of I think the fixations and the tinnitus ends up being like getting, you know, what the Spanish word earworm
yeah,
is translated
yeah.
to. You know, just like this like thing stuck in your head, this song stuck in your head.
Ah.
And for me, it ended up being way too often Mambo Number 5.
And of all the songs.
Now, I know. It's really a bit of a curse for me. And like, I haven't heard it actually played in years, and I don't go seeking it, and I never went seeking it. And even now, I'll wake up, like a couple weeks ago, it was back when I woke up.
Oh my God.
Like, oh, okay.
Well, at one point, there's a page where there's actually a playlist of all, I guess it's all the songs that play back in your head.
Yeah, yeah.
I think absolutely. It's on page 52 where yep. you have a songs on loop that include. Now, I have no idea who you are, and I don't know what your musical tastes are, but I can't imagine that these are the songs that you listen to a lot.
No, they're pretty brutal, and I think they'd be the song that I would usually turn the radio from.
The Inspector Gadget theme song? Oh, my God.
Yeah, pretty brutal.
Oh, my God. Now, the fascinating thing is that by necessity, by the way of you trying to figure out what's going on, you've become an expert on traumatic brain injury. You attended conferences of neurology and stuff like that. And you actually got a really interesting historical perspective that's in this book, too, of different people historically who have suffered from traumatic brain injury.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm probably the last person who would call myself an expert, but I am a person who's, like, very curious about the world generally. And when this happened, I couldn't recognize myself anymore, and I didn't. I usually go to books to like help me, you know, as a writer and a reader, understand what's going on. And there was like self help, and there were clinical studies, but there was nothing in the middle. You know, I'm a literary writer. There was nothing that like spoke to me, and so I started just to do, when I was well enough, just a ton of research and kind of to educate myself. And then when I definitively started this project, I couldn't believe all of these historical figures that I came across that had head injuries, you know, like Harriet Tubman,
yeah.
not the Harriet Tubman we know today without, you know, she had a pretty serious concussion at age 12 when this heavy leaden weight was thrown at her at this store. She had been given permission to leave property, but another enslaved person had not, and they were trying to catch that person, and a slave master threw a weight at her head accidentally, not intending to hit her, and then she starts to see visions from God. She starts to get these debilitating migraines that she actually never recovers from, even when she flees north and ultimately in her older years gets surgery for the migraines. Even then, they don't relent. But it's that injury and that vulnerability that ultimately persuades her to walk the like 90 miles on foot to Philadelphia. And so that's a hidden, you know, there's so much she did for enslaved people and her community. But we don't know this about her. And similarly, when I read the report on Henry VIII by Yale scientists in 2019, they essentially diagnosed him, you know, they're like, did he have schizophrenia? Did he have syphilis? We weren't sure. And then they basically put these pieces together, did an analysis and said, actually, he had CTE, which is what football players are yep. diagnosed with in postmortem.
Well, that reminds me, and you write about this in the book. How do you feel about watching football games now?
Oh, you know, this is an amazing thing about the human experience is that I am so aware and uncomfortable of every single hit.
Yep.
And you know, am aware that we think of these men as just like armor, like not even bodies, just armor. And yet I have this like, I live in Philly, I'm an Eagles fan, and I have this like cultural connection, you know, and like appreciation for the game. And I grew up watching it. We were like a house full of women, and all the women knew football. And so it's hard to let it go. And I think like if we all just stopped immediately watching it, we would abandon all these young people we've groomed only for this sport. You know, many of them men of color. And so it's a really complicated issue, but it's also quite clear that there's absolutely no such thing as a protective enough helmet.
You're right. You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My guest tonight is Annie Leontis. She's a professor of writing at George Washington University, and she has just written an amazing book called Sex with a Brain Injury on Concussion and Recovery. Is there a similarities or is it the same thing in PTSD when you have traumatic brain injury? Is it the same thing?
We understand them as being kind of comorbidities, meaning the overlap of PTSD and TBI is kind of astounding. And when you add other things such as self-medicating, which can at times turn into addiction, then we have, you know, what Dr. Kim Gorgans coins as the superfecta. And these are, they're kind of like recursive relationship between these experiences, so that somebody who's, you know, vulnerable to TBI is also vulnerable to PTSD. We're seeing that expressed across society and in terms of like implications, like not only in the military, as we saw with recent reports that came out about that mass shooting in Maine, but also in the criminal justice system. Probably the most shocking statistics I came across when I was researching is that people in prison are 7 times more likely to have had a brain injury before they got to prison. We think of prison as really violent spaces, but we don't understand that a lot of the behaviors that are criminalized, you know, the emotional ability, issues with anger, impulsiveness, these all often result from TBI. And so it's not rare or new in this country to incarcerate mental illness. But because brain injury is so invisible, so many of these people in prison who have had a head injury have gone untreated, and we don't understand the root issue. And the especially wild thing that I discovered was that women in prison are 97% likely to have had a head injury, most of them in the year preceding incarceration.
There's a whole chapter in your book about this, and I hope I'm pronouncing his name right, Markel Taylor?
Markel, yeah.
Markel Taylor, who's sort of leading the fight about recognizing this as a critical issue for the incarcerated population. But you also write, you know, what can we do with that information? So maybe what put them there had to do with traumatic brain injury, but does that mean that they shouldn't be there, or what's the answer?
Of course, it's complicated, right? There are a lot of ethical questions around this. And, you know, Markel Taylor co-authored a chapter in the book with me about criminal justice reform. He's a Denver businessman and a prison reform advocate. And actually, he served 20 years in the system. And while in the system, he actually helped write into law a bill that ensures neuropsychological screenings for people about to be sentenced. Now, it's the first of its kind in the country, as far as I'm aware. And there are other really cool things happening in Oregon. David Krakke and Siebert are doing some amazing things to help students get, students who are young people who have had concussions return to learn. They're doing some great legislation there, and we're trying to think about how we can scale these kinds of programs nationally. So I don't think anyone would argue that people shouldn't be held accountable or responsible for their actions. But if prison is supposed to be a place of rehabilitation, if that's the higher kind of goal or purpose of the institution, then we need to think about how mental health plays into this, particularly around something invisible like brain injury, which, again, if you're in prison, the rate of TBI is only equaled or surpassed by PTSD. So again, we're talking about these kind of intractable conditions that should someone, you know, do their time and get out, well, they're just going to go right back in, because the issue is, you know, there's incredible rates of recidivism without this kind of treatment. So the question becomes, do we want to punish or do we want to repair?
moving beyond that, This book is also a bit of a memoir of you, especially your mother, about your mother, and also of you coming to terms with the fact that you were queer. One of my favorite parts of that is you kept having these dreams of that you were a lumberjack. And you sort of didn't quite get the point. Talk to me about the lumberjack dream, because I love that dream.
I mean,
weren't you also Axl Rose at one point?
Did I what?
Weren't you also Axl Rose at one point?
Yeah. These are kind of like little riffs of fantasies, and part of that is reckoning with like my queerness and my gender queerness, and I like jokingly identify myself as like a quote delicate man, you know, like that's my gender, and I'm very
But you're a
very enamored with
you're a lumberjack, and you're returning home to what, a beautiful woman?
I think that was like a lot of like Civil War era films that I watched as a kid, you know, like the river runs through it or something.
But that's another whole thing that this book is about you maturing until these horrible things happen to you, and it's such a long process. People are hearing us laugh now, but trust me, this is a tough book, but tough in the best sort of way. It seems like the recovery is such a long step-by-step process. The final chapter in your book called The Healing Algorithm really talks about how anything can be an algorithm. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, in terms of healing, you know, I think when you're inside a really dark experience and you've lost a lot, you know, whether it's a relationship or a sense of self, you know, one of the things I talk about in the book is what the philosophers call the crisis of the conceptualized self. You know, you have this idea of yourself as like athletic or smart or capable. And I know a woman who, like, for instance, like was really good at math and then had a head injury and couldn't do math anymore. And, you know, that was like a loss for her, right? So when you're in these dark places and you feel really disconnected from yourself, what I found was important for me was just to find any little way to connect to the world again, you know? And this might sound like hyperbolic or just unfamiliar, but I would go into grocery stores and be unable to like walk down the aisles of cans because of the colors on the cans and the, you know, the lights. And on YouTube, you can literally reimmerse yourself in the grocery store experience by, you know, a camera just like goes down, like a drone camera is going down the aisles to help prepare you, right? So like doing just like little exercises, but even just for me, it was like take a walk in the world and look at this flower you would have never looked at before your injuries or taking it in, you know? And so, yeah, anything can be a kind of reimmersion or physical therapy. And I don't know, I guess probably there are many of your listeners who have gone through their own you know, loss or struggle, and you kind of come back from the dead and just appreciating the world more.
What I got out of is little steps, and then really be thankful that you make those little accomplishments. And that every one is a big thing that you've done now. Like you said, walking down those aisles, being able to buy a can of corn or something like that. People who don't understand that, there's too much, it's like too much stimulus can set off all sorts of things. And and that's part of the problem. After Brain Injury, you wrote, we lose the words we once used to describe ourselves, which is what you're just talking about. Strong, industrious, clever, creative, talented, resilient, and imaginative. And gaining that stuff back is a huge process. Do you ever feel like you've really recovered?
You know, I feel very lucky because, for instance, I could write this book.
Yeah.
You know, and I've recently been, you know, I just was in Denver actually celebrating with Markel last week, and I've built up some resilience again. I mean, I'm an immigrant, and so the idea of like hard work is pretty essential to who I am.
Yep.
But I've been very lucky to like be able to like you're saying, take these little steps. And again, I'm no doctor, but the anecdotally, the number I keep hearing is, you know, 5 years. It takes 5 years to come out of concussion. And that's borne out for me and for some other folks that, like, things may never look the same. You know, like I have an accommodation at work for classrooms without overhead lighting.
Yep.
But I can exercise again, and I can be in the world again, and I'm writing a novel, which I wasn't sure I would really be able to do again. So I feel very lucky to have this, and then, you know, it feels really important to share it with others and to really have a cultural shift, a paradigmatic shift in terms of how we think about brain injury. And I really think of it like, you know, the way we conceived of smoking in public and public policy in the 80s, right? Like we had right. the Surgeon General's warning for decades, but we were like still smoking on planes and in hospitals, even through like the 80s, which seems like kind of wild now, right? Like we just would not do that on a plane. And I think we might be at a kind of similar tipping point with brain injury.
Yeah. This is an amazing book. I'm amazed you can do an interview. After reading the book, I'm just grateful that you're here.
No, thank you. I'm lucky that I've done enough of these that I've gotten my practice in. And
plus the fact you teach. So that's a huge deal.
Exactly.
My guest tonight has been Annie Leontis, professor of writing at George Washington University. And we've been talking about her new book. It's really an amazing read. Sex with a Brain Injury on Concussion and Recovery. Annie, it's been a real pleasure.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. This was wonderful.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.